Welcome to The Vampire Squid, a podcast about increasing transparency and education in finance. This is your host, Alan Lee, and welcome to another episode of The Vampire Squid. I have on a very special guest today, Trevor Shi. I've actually known Trevor since freshman year of college, and we've been sort of tied to the hip ever since, you know, doing the same internships, working at Goldman after college. But Trevor, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, Alan. This is exciting stuff. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So I guess before we dive into, you know, your experience at Slack and what you've done there, could you give me like a quick background on who you are so our listeners know who they're listening to?
Yeah, sure, Alan. So born and raised in Seattle, Washington. Grew up big sports fan, played pretty much every sport, baseball, basketball, tennis, really stuck to tennis starting in high school, ended up playing with the club team over at Berkeley. Didn't really know what I wanted to do, so dabbed a little bit in technology internships over at Microsoft, Facebook. Decided that finance was a pretty good route to do, so ended up joining Goldman with you, and then heard about Slack as really one of the hot startups in Silicon Valley. So ended up joining Slack about a year after working at Goldman, and have been there ever since.
Cool. And then before we dive into Slack, what do you think about Goldman? I know that you left a little bit early, but what was your impression?
Yeah, I mean, we did the internship junior year together and then full time. Honestly, like the junior summer internship just felt like a sponge trying to soak everything in. First of all, you have to navigate through all of the financial jargon. You have to learn what unveiling the kimono means, what boiling the ocean means. So for a couple of weeks, was just learning how to speak like a banker. But overall, like the internship was really awesome. I mean, the first week you spend it in New York, you meet other classmates from around the world.
Yeah. And you want to share any stories that you had at Goldman during full-time, or any of the highlights of your experience?
Yeah, I mean, overall, full-time, like the hours are, of course, very real. But overall, like, it's really the experience with the people that you work with, which I think a lot of analysts will say when they look back at their analyst career. Some people you really connect with, like every deal, it doesn't even seem like work. You have like a pretty good mojo going with like the associate or the senior bankers on the team. It really feels much more like a learning process, but like if the personalities don't really vibe together, it really feels like a grind. Definitely had both experiences, but overall, like, can't really complain. I think that Goldman really, really attracted some of the smartest people, especially in finance or Silicon Valley. So really no regrets doing it.
Yeah. No, I can definitely attest to what you're saying. It really makes the experience, you know, your team and sort of the projects that you work on at Goldman. So for those that, you know, don't know what Slack is or are interested in technology startups, can you give a brief background on, you know, what Slack is as a company? What do you guys do?
Yeah, sure. So best way to describe Slack is it's basically a real-time messaging platform that connects people and the tools that you use at work every day, kind of no matter where you are or what you do. It's got a pretty nice set of features, like chat, calls, growing platform of bots and integrations that that you can use to communicate with your team, make decisions about what really matters to your team and actually get work done. I was pretty fortunate to be the first business operations hire at Slack. So I was really working with basically a blank sheet. For those that don't know what business operations is, best way to describe it is that you're basically focusing on optimizing a business's day-to-day activities that impact profitability. So whether that's growing revenue, so top-line revenue, or somehow impacting expenses to improve bottom-line net income. So at Slack, we're really focusing in on building a top-notch sales team. So I've been really focusing on that over the past 6 months.
Okay. And I think some of the statistics for Slack, it was the first startup to reach $1 billion or the fastest startup to reach $1 billion. Is that correct?
Yeah. There's a lot of crazy statistics out there. I'm not sure if it was the fastest, but it had to be one of the quickest to reach $1 billion. Yeah, I mean, like, the company is growing insanely quickly. I think when I first started, we only had about 200 people worldwide. So at that point, we only had an office in San Francisco, Vancouver, and Dublin. But recently, opened up an office in Melbourne, New York, opened up a bunch of different satellite offices. So the company is really growing. It's pretty crazy. Like, you look around, you meet new faces every single day. So it's a very different environment coming from like a very rigid corporate structure, like Goldman. But even doing a summer internship at Facebook, it felt much like I didn't really feel the growth at Facebook, but at Slack, it's an insane feeling.
Okay. And I think, you know, I've read that people think of Slack as this email killer or an email replacement. Is that how you guys view Slack or what you ultimately want to be to replace email, or is there something else?
That definitely wasn't the goal of Slack, but I think it was just one of the things that came as a result of the product just doing what it was trying to do. A lot of people do compare it as like an email killer. Honestly, I think since joining Slack, I've probably sent maybe 5 emails, of which probably 4 or 5 of those were to you. just talking about random stuff. But yeah, for the most part, like honestly, like Slack has completely removed all internal email for us.
Wow. I mean, I remember, and I'm sure you do at your time at Goldman, we probably receive anywhere on a given day between 50 to 500 emails a day. So I applaud the mission. Cheers to that.
Cheers, man. Yeah, no, it's crazy. Like, you go to lunch, you come back, your inbox has 200 unread emails, of which half say fire drill, where are you?
Yeah, I definitely remember those days and don't remember them too fondly. if you could tell the listeners, how did you get the job? What was the interview process like? What questions they asked, etc.?
Yeah, unfortunately did not know anyone at Slack. So I guess I got really lucky landing an interview just through the general application process over a year ago.
So is that just like applying online?
Yeah, just applying online. So got pretty lucky there. But overall, like, I mean, today for pretty much every position that we get hundreds of applications. So
yeah,
I bet if I applied today, I definitely wouldn't even get an interview. But overall, like, the interview process was really cool. Had the opportunity to meet with the heads of a bunch of different departments. Met with the head of our operations and finance team, met with the head of marketing, met our chief accounting officer. So pretty deep interview process overall. It wasn't like banking interviews where you basically rehearse how to walk through a DCF or LBO model. They're really trying to figure out what makes you tick, what your motivations are, why you want to work at Slack. Where you get your general question like, oh, would you see yourself in 5 years? But the questions in tech companies are just much more personal. It's more of like, what's driving you here to Slack? What about the vision of Slack really ticks with your personal views? Where do you really connect with the values of the company? So overall, like, the experience was really cool.
Interesting. And how many rounds of interviews do you have? And I know with early stage companies, sometimes, you know, they make you meet with everybody, but it seems like you at least met quite a bit yourself.
Yeah, overall, the rounds was, I think it was only like 2 or 3 rounds. But overall, like, yeah, I have heard that tech interviews do take a long time. I think I had a buddy who was going through a process with Dropbox, had 3 or 4 rounds, 2 rounds of like flying him in from LA to San Francisco. So the process is longer overall in banking, in tech.
Okay. And, you know, what do you do on a day-to-day basis? And I usually like, if it's possible for you to walk me through, you know, what time you wake up to when you get in to, you know, when you leave, what does the breakdown look like?
Yeah, sure. So wake up about 6:30, usually get a text from you saying, hey man, coming home from the office. but overall,
not anymore.
Yeah, thank God. But overall, like, the work-life balance is much more steady in technology. Like, definitely have time to exercise again, pick up hobbies, playing a lot of tennis again. But overall, like, you get into the office around like 9:30 or 10. Slack is already buzzing in the morning. Scan through all your messages, figure out kind of priorities for the day, meet with your manager. In tech, you work with a lot of different departments. So you're not working with just folks in finance. You're working with marketing, you're working with sales. So every day is overall pretty different. But what's pretty cool about Slack is that a lot of folks that they hire, they have really, really cool experience. So a lot of folks are hired from like Google or Facebook. So it's much less about figuring out kind of what we should be doing on a day-to-day basis. It's more about like figuring out kind of what we should be executing.
Very interesting. I guess, what type of tools do you guys use? Do you guys still use PowerPoint? Do you guys use Excel for, you know, your daily activities?
Yeah, still use it all. Still use Excel, still use PowerPoint. I honestly had to kind of relearn Excel and PowerPoint because, you know, banking, we have like, I think half of Goldman now is actually all engineers for their tech team. So we had like G style in Excel where you basically press like two buttons and out would pop like your Excel model or your entire pitch book. Unfortunately at a startup, you have none of that. You have a very blank Excel and PowerPoint sheet. So I had to relearn all the formulas. So, I mean, just in terms of like the applications you use on a daily basis, yeah, you use Microsoft Office. But you use a lot of project management tools like Trello, just because you have a bunch of different projects going on at once. Really important to just keep on top of these things. We actually use a lot of Google apps, so we don't use Outlook anymore. But overall, like no crazy programs outside of just really like your core Microsoft Office, Google apps.
And you know, since you've been working at Slack, what kind of skills do you think that you've developed there?
I think biggest skill that I've gained from working at Slack is probably figuring out to work with different personality types. Coming out of banking, I think most people's personalities are very similar. Everyone's like super intense about their work. Everyone thinks that their project is like number one priority. It's pretty different in technology. As I mentioned earlier, like working with folks in marketing and sales and accounting, everyone has like different motivations. Everyone ticks like a little differently. So overall, just trying to figure out how to work cohesively across different groups, managing different workflows, figuring out how you can help others and in turn kind of like help you run your own project. But overall, I think that's my biggest takeaway.
Definitely. I think finance probably attracts sort of a similar personality type. But, you know, with startups, you have, you know, your business side and your engineers and your salespeople. And I guess it's a huge mix of personalities. And, you know, what is your outlook on the tech market? What do you think about the bubble that people think we're in?
I think we're actually in a pretty exciting point in the technology market. Yeah, people do think that there is some sort of bubble forming, but I think overall, like investors in the market, market sentiment overall, I think they've kind of gone through enough revs to kind of identify companies that have legitimate businesses and ones that really don't. You talk about, or people often like to talk about becoming like a unicorn company, which then end up like bursting just because they couldn't turn into like legitimate business. But I think today, if you look at the private companies that have like the largest valuations, like Uber, Airbnb, these companies, not only do they have like a very sticky product, but they've actually turned into legitimate businesses. Their top line is growing insanely quickly. They're also monitoring their expenses. Of course, like Slack, we want to be kind of viewed the same way. Very sticky product, very consumer friendly, but also really focused on becoming like a legitimate business.
Yeah, no, I think that's an interesting answer because, you know, when people think about bubble or when they hear about the tech bubble, they automatically think every technology company is a bubble, which isn't necessarily true. I mean, there probably are technology companies that shouldn't be valued as high as they are, but then there are, you know, legitimate businesses like Slack, like Uber that are providing a real resource to consumers. So, I mean, I did an episode, or there was an episode that included some of the perks of banking, but I think they definitely pale in comparison to tech startups. You know, what are the perks of Slack?
Perks are pretty awesome at Slack. We actually don't have meals every single day, unfortunately, kind of like how you had it at Google, where I'd basically visit you for dinner every day. but we do have meals. So we have lunch on Mondays. We have happy hours on Thursdays and breakfast on Friday. We actually have massages once a week on Thursdays. We call it like no meeting Thursdays, therapeutic Thursdays. So Thursdays overall are awesome. We actually have a full-time barista. So taught us all how to make awesome latte art. A couple other things. We have a professional development bonus. So basically you can use an allotment of money towards going, it can pay for you to go to a conference, learn how to do a class, learn how to make a podcast, for example. But you also have a personal development too. So you can use that for like sports class, learning how to knit, whatever you want to do with it. Healthcare is all taken care of, which is pretty awesome. You get all your equipment, standing desk. I think best perk overall is being able to wear whatever you want, not having to wear a suit and tie like you had to do in banking. But overall, the perks are pretty awesome.
Nice. And I remember when I visited your office, I saw a treadmill desk. Can you explain that to the listeners, what a treadmill desk is? And I've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah, I think the main reason why we have that is if you spend a little too much time at happy hour or go through the buffet line a couple too many times during lunch, it's kind of there to help you offset it. But overall, there's a lot of really fun things at the office. I mean, they have like a game room, music room, a lot of fun stuff. Treadmill desk, of course. But overall, like, the office is pretty neat.
Cool. You know, I'm sure a lot of listeners are interested in, you know, tech and in finance. You know, what type of advice do you have for people that are looking to get into high growth technology startups like Slack? You know, what should they be preparing for? How should they be readying themselves?
I think best advice that I have for these folks are, first of all, to do their due diligence on the company that they're applying for. I remember when I was conducting interviews probably about 6 months ago, you'd ask some of these candidates like, hey, what's like the mission of Slack? What's something interesting about Slack in the news? And they'd say something along the lines of like, oh, they just raised a ton of money. They're worth like $4 billion now. Things like that. I think it's really, really important, and it really shows through the interview process who is really kind of passionate about the company that they're applying for, who's really zoned in on the mission of the company. Just because, like, when you're working at a fast growing company, tech company like Slack, you really have to be zoned into the mission because, like, the grind is a lot higher than working at like a Facebook or Google, where these companies have already made it. They're kind of just adding on. Companies like Uber and Slack, they're really trying to prove themselves still. So like the grind is a little different, and you really have to be passionate about what the company is doing.
And also another question that I had was, I know that Slack recently started their own internal fund, I think, called the Slack Fund. What's going on there? I've never really heard of startups having their own fund so early.
Yeah, so Slack Fund is an $80 million fund that we actually partnered with Accel, Kleiner Perkins, Index Ventures, Social Capital, Spark Capital, and also Andreessen Horowitz. So we created the fund basically to support companies that were building products on top of Slack, just in terms of kind of the qualities that we look for in these companies. Of course, like a team with a record of success or a really strong potential for what they're building, products that really improve where and kind of how people work on a daily basis. These are just some of the qualities that we look for, but overall, like, it's pretty open-ended. It's pretty exciting. We've now invested about $2 million in 14 startups. If you are already a user of Slack, some of the bots that we've invested in include like Howdy, Abacus, Birdly, just to name a few of the more popular bots. But overall, it is a really, really exciting time, to kind of be building on top of the Slack platform.
No, that's helpful. And, you know, understanding a little bit more about Slack, you know, what you do, you know, how to break in. Now, I just have a couple fun shotgun type questions for you. First one is, are you superstitious? And if so, what is your superstition?
Definitely have a couple of superstitions. Growing up, played a lot of tennis tournaments. So one of my weird kind of gross superstitions was I could not change out of whatever clothes I was wearing. So I'd wear the same socks, same underwear, same sweaty shirts and shorts all the way from the first match to the end of the tournament, which kind of consisted of like 4 or 5 matches. So solid 10 or 12 hours just in the same clothes.
Wow.
I got one more. Since I'm from Seattle, huge Seahawks fan, before every big game, girlfriend and I, we actually go get Vietnamese sandwiches, banh mi. So we absolutely have to get them, even though they make our stomachs hurt. But we seem to always win when we eat them.
Why banh mi?
I don't know. We actually kind of stumbled upon this like dirty store pretty close to where we live. We won a huge game that day. So ever since then, we always get sandwiches from there.
What do you think of Marshawn Lynch?
Cal legend. Beast mode. Sometimes he hangs out at Berkeley. I think he benches what most people squat.
Nice. Did you have any odd jobs before college?
I think the weirdest job, or not really weird, but worked at Famous Footwear, my very first job in retail. My career in retail started and ended there pretty quickly. Only worked there for about a month. They stuck me in women's shoes, and unfortunately, I knew nothing about high heels or any of that stuff. But that was probably the weirdest job that I had.
Interesting. What is your favorite restaurant in the city?
Favorite restaurant in the city, probably Kokari over in the Financial District. No, it's a very popular restaurant, but can't seem to get enough of that place. Love the pita bread, love the hummus. Wine selection's awesome. Desserts are incredible. Pretty much everything that you get there is pretty top-notch.
Yeah, Kokari's a good choice. Final one. How do you stay motivated, or you know, who or what motivates you?
I think what motivates me is seeing others around me succeed too. I remember, for example, like playing tennis growing up in high school. You know, I try my best to win my own individual matches, but overall, like if the team didn't win, then it didn't really have like the same feeling. Kind of applies to the same thing at work. Like if you do your own job really well, it's great and everything, great for you, shows that you really know what you're doing. But kind of in the tech world, you're working with like a bunch of different departments. It's really like a team effort. And when projects go really well, smoothly, when senior folks really like your work, it feels much more rewarding that you're kind of able to orchestrate a really successful project and that everyone on that team really receives a lot of great recognition. So overall, I think that's what motivates me.
Cool. And so final question, you know, as you know, this podcast is about, you know, helping increase transparency in finance. You know, what thoughts do you have on this, or how do you think we can best do this to increase transparency in finance?
I think finance is a pretty rigid structure and will continue to be so. But I think with anything, if you have more information, then things start to become a little clearer. I think one example that was pretty interesting was, you know, you read about Microsoft purchasing LinkedIn. You know, the articles that you see published are all about, oh, how much cash did Microsoft dish out for LinkedIn? What was the premium? What's going to be happening to all the LinkedIn employees? But I think what was actually really interesting about that transaction was reading the presentation from Microsoft, kind of their thought process on why it made sense for Microsoft to purchase LinkedIn. How did LinkedIn's core product group kind of fit into the roadmap of Microsoft? So I think getting the perspective, I guess, of the customers versus kind of the financial aspect of like why transaction makes sense can hopefully help increase transparency in finance.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I did an episode earlier on M&A to help people understand, you know, why transactions make sense. Why would a company buy another company? And, you know, one of the most recent examples is obviously Microsoft LinkedIn, but we'll see how that goes. But thanks so much for joining us today, Trevor.
Thanks for having me on.
As always, guys, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, feel free to shoot me an email at alan@thevampiresquid.com, or you can visit thevampiresquid.com and go to the contact form. I will post Trevor's LinkedIn online. So in case you guys have any questions, feel free to get in contact with him. But until next time, thanks again for listening, and ciao.